Welcome to Journey to Oz, the podcast where we share migration stories from overseas to Australia. We are both registered migration agents, Evan, who specialises in employer sponsor visas, and myself, Nick, who specialises in family visas. Evan, you interviewed Ryan Kelly from Creative Natives, who came to Australia as a backpacker and secured a last-minute employer sponsorship as a recruiter. Fast forward to today, and Ryan now runs his own recruitment agency and recently celebrated obtaining Australian citizenship. I imagine this episode is not one to be missed for those looking to secure employment or a change in career.
Absolutely, mate. I'm really looking forward to sharing this episode. Ryan's journey of how he strived for Australian permanent residency is one that shares many parallels with striving to secure a job or a change in careers. We touch on many common traits between the two, such as Ryan's drive and determination, and his ability to be flexible. It's a really fascinating story from start to finish. And to kick it off, I asked Ryan about where he grew up.
I am from the UK. I grew up in an area called Maidstone, which ironically, I now live in a suburb in Melbourne called Maidstone. So kind of gone full circle. I left the UK back in 2010. I was made redundant in my role at the time and decided to head off overseas and see a bit of the world and travelled South America, New Zealand, and then arrived in Australia with very little in the form of a life plan and, took up various jobs as many backpackers do, anything from selling magazine subscriptions, selling wine over the phone, insurance, and then I through a few friends who had recommended it, decided to pursue a role in recruitment. And I'm sure, like the majority of recruiters, it's not something that I had given much thought. It's certainly not what I studied at university for. But in short, it was a way that I could stay in Australia, and I had at the time used my second year visa. I had obtained my second year visa through doing 4 months of farm work in Mildura, and I was coming to the end of my second year visa, and quite honestly the panic button had been pressed, and I thought, how do I stay in this country? And yeah, recruitment provided me an opportunity to do so, and I took it with both hands and went down the path of recruitment.
Which is hilarious because you sort of fell into it, whereas recruitment is such a fulfilling sort of area. So you've sort of found out the hard way, I guess, going headfirst into it, but then realizing just how fulfilling it can be, helping people with filling that void in their life, which is a better job or a different job or just employment altogether. But that security that it brings to someone's life and to their family as well. So, And you would have probably in hindsight, looking back, would have been quite young at the time and now were, realizing how many people you've helped over all the years and just what's involved.
It is definitely a rewarding profession. It allows you to meet interesting people. You obviously help shape their lives, so that's a really good part of the role. But as I say, when I originally got into it, I didn't really have a proper idea of what the role involved. But yeah, for the fact that it's let me stay in Australia, it's something which I have a lot of debt to, I guess, as a profession.
Yeah, and you took it with both hands. And you mentioned before about your travel around the world. There was South America, there was New Zealand, there was Australia. What made it about Australia that said to yourself, look, I want to stay? Was it a certain moment? Was it expectations that you didn't realize you had till you were here? What was that moment for you?
Yeah, look, I guess the original why I ended up in Australia was we'd bought a round the world ticket and Australia was the last port of call. And I'd had a group of friends who essentially had done the same trip but were 6 months ahead. So when I arrived in Sydney back in 2010, they'd kind of trodden that path a bit and they'd got their, office job and, they kind of were a little bit ahead of us. So we kind of just, naturally gravitated towards it. At the time when I arrived in Sydney, I was living in King's Cross and King's Cross definitely wasn't what I had imagined Australia to be. And I'll be honest, I was probably a little bit underwhelmed when I first got to Australia. We'd, been through some pretty you know, beautiful countries. And
yeah,
you know, in fact, I remember vividly actually when I got off the plane in Sydney, it was absolutely pouring hard rain. and I think my first experience of Sydney was going to an Irish pub for a steak. So it was just a bit of an odd transition. And I think only when I walked down Beach Road in Bondi and I saw the beach, I was like, actually, this is Australia.
Postcard Australia, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was a moment where I was like, you know what, actually, I probably would like to stay here. And I think, like anywhere, the longer you stay somewhere, you know, the more you get to know the place, and, you know, it became home pretty quickly. And, you know, then you know, going to Mildura to do your farm work was a funny experience. I quite enjoyed the simple life in the sense that you didn't have to worry about, like, adult stuff. You just basically picked some fruit, played table tennis, drank beer, and, you know, that was kind of the life for 4 months. And
with like-minded individuals as well.
Yeah, carefree 4 months that I wouldn't have changed for the world. Like, I mean, at the time it was, you know, it was pretty challenging, but, you know, it was a fun experience and one that I do put down as a really positive experience. And then arriving in Melbourne and, you know, it was just a very different version of Australia than Sydney. And I think it suited me really well. And then we just kind of went about setting up a life here, really. And yeah, it's been fun.
Yeah. And that journey to permanent residency. So that would have started when you got to Melbourne. Talk us through from your working holiday visa. You've talked your first one, then your second one renewed with that agricultural work. What was the pathway like then all the way through the permanent residency for you as your profession as a recruiter?
Yeah. So, I mean, I was up against it because I had to get into recruitment. So when I decided to get into recruitment, I literally had weeks left of my second working holiday visa. So in order for me to stay, it required the company at the time to sponsor me without me doing a day's work. And traditionally back then it was, you'd normally do 6 months in a job, and if it went well, they would begin the recruitment process. So actually getting my first job in recruitment was really tough because there was a commitment from a company. There was, you know, at the time there was a lot of options for them. There was a lot of backpackers that were bending over backwards to stay in the country. So it did require actually a lot of interviews. I had a lot of rejections. It went for quite a while of, yeah, we liked him, but, you know, not enough experience or whatnot. And the company at the time who did sponsor me, I think I had 7 rounds of interviews, and it was a real, real relief when they finally said, look, we'll take you on and sponsor you. And really, I mean, it's pretty like life-changing moment because I was on the cusp of going back on a plane to England, and then all of a sudden I had an opportunity to stay. And
yeah, someone taking that chance on you, yeah.
And then I had to work out what I, you know, the recruitment piece. I was like, well, we've got to work this out now. And then, so, you know, I did that. I worked for that company for a couple of years. Then I moved to a new recruitment company where they took over my sponsorship. That was, again, a bit of a painful process because at the time it was quite a period where I had to wait for that company to take over that. So I was probably out of work for 6 weeks in that. When you have limited money, 6 weeks out of work is a long time.
Yeah, and sitting on your hands as well that whole time.
Exactly, yeah, waiting to start a new job. And then yeah, once I was eligible for permanent residency, you know, submitted the application. And, yeah, I think from submitting to approval would have been about 18 months, I think, before that PR came through. And, I mean, again, you know, talking about life-changing moments, that's again where it's an incredible feeling. And I definitely don't take for granted, you know, having the opportunity to live in this country. I've had plenty of friends that, you know, that we were in Australia together and for various reasons weren't able to get permanent residency. And you know, it's incredibly disappointing, you know, for them when they're in a position where they have so much to offer, but because of criteria or for various reasons, they couldn't stay. So,
well, that lack of a sponsor, like that was a turning point for you, because different story today if that person didn't take a punt on you.
Exactly, exactly. You know, there is a lot of luck, but I think if I was to sort of say to anyone any advice about, you know, going down this path, and is you do need to have resilience, and you do need to, you know, put yourself in the way of opportunities. And you know, and I'm speaking probably, you know, in a different period where, you know, certain visas give you access to PR and certain don't. And you know, I know that for a lot of people there isn't that option. So I'm not saying, you know, resilience is only going to get you.
Yeah, it gets you over the line. Like, yeah,
but if you are in a position where you do qualify for it, and that's the ultimate goal, I feel like there needs to be an element of flexibility in your approach, because it's not a straight path, I don't think.
Yeah, and it's crazy because you mentioned how you're able to jump headfirst into recruitment and the employer take the chance on you. Today, and it even tightened last October 2020, it got tightened even more because of the increased unemployment rates. So now there's advertising on a mandatory government platform. We're advertising for at least 4 weeks. I mean, back in the day when you got your sponsorship, really someone could have technically have had 1 day of experience. And that, it's, as long as the argument was really strong that, hey, Ryan is the best person for the job, advertise on a platform for 3 or 4 days. I mean, I used to advertise on Gumtree sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and gone are those days. And like you said, you know, that opportunity may not be there for everyone these days. And there was your friends who didn't have that opportunity for permanent residency. But like you said, you be resilient when it's given to you and make the most of it when you can. And I guess that's probably a big parallel to what you do today, which is run your own business. Funnily enough, in recruitment, you really found your calling in life. Really that parallel between striving for permanent residency, that resilience, you probably see that a lot in business ownership as well. Can you talk us through your business, Creative Natives, and what you do for others?
Yeah, look, I mean, we're a recruitment agency that specializes in the creative marketing and digital space. We set up 2 and a bit years ago. I made my first hire just weeks before COVID.
That's right, yes.
And, you know, in all honesty, the business kind of imploded overnight, and I mean that definitely challenged me in a different way that I've ever experienced. And yeah, it's a horrible feeling that you know, something which I guess is quite relatable to, you know, obtaining, you know, visa status, because some of these things are out of your control, and I think that is something which gives people a great deal of anxiety and unrest when they have things that are completely out of their control. And that was the same as, you know, the pandemic is how a lot of people have with their visa situation. I think as a country, we absolutely should be encouraging and be accommodating to overseas skills, because as a recruiter at the moment, I have seen the biggest skills shortage and talent shortage that we've ever experienced. And you know, it's not sustainable. You know, there's a lot of companies at various different industries that are planning this huge growth in the next few years. But we all know that growth can only be achieved with having the right people in the company. Yeah. And firsthand, I can tell you that there isn't enough people across a lot of different disciplines. And it's a real shame, because I think it's an opportunity for Australia to become a real hotspot for probably not the right terminology these days, but it's an opportunity to grab, you know, and make Australia the home of technology, of innovation, because it's got all the qualities of a country that, you know, what I've fallen in love with and why people love visiting it. It just needs to have the system in place that allows people and allows professionals to come and make a living over here. And, you know, restricting people to a limited visa, it really puts off a lot of people, you know, uprooting their lives and changing, coming across the other side of the world for a limited period of time. Like, you're not going to pull your kids out of a school for a 2-year break.
Exactly. And a lot of them are 2 years. And further to that, people are really pocketed into an occupation, which is defined by a six-digit code, defined by these tasks and duties, this type of qualification. But it's preventing the people who are very adaptive, and you use that word resilient, who come to Australia and they work in all different types of industries and have all different types of backgrounds, but they have a skill set and that adaptability, which is, you know, what employers would love. And if you can have someone in your business who can jump headfirst into different areas, but, you know, can be very adaptive in that sort of space, that's the sort of talent that you want. But if someone doesn't have yet at least 2 years of experience and meeting this and meeting that, you're turning away a lot of potential great talent.
I just think it's a kind of very old school
system.
This is how we've always done it. You know, you're ticking a list of skills that have been around for years. You know, it's not enabling individuals with skills, emerging skills, to get seen. So you're essentially saying that skill sets we've had for years, yes, you qualify, but skills that are coming up and will be in demand and that will give us the edge on the rest of the world, they don't qualify.
Yeah, we'll favour traditionalism. We won't favour, being adaptive and ahead of curves. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I think you talk about adaptability. Anyone who comes to a country that that doesn't speak your language has incredible courage. And I think that's something which employers really overlook. You know, it's life. It's so brave to come into a country where English isn't your first language, where you're starting from scratch. You know, talk about attitude and having the right skills. I mean, that is fundamentally the core of what makes up a good worker. Not how well they perform in an interview. You know, you've got to look beyond that as a way of judging people.
Or a software skill that they're intermediate, but they could become expert level after 4 hours of tutorials or something like that.
Exactly.
I talked to university students at a couple of different universities and TAFEs in Melbourne, and I talked to them at the point where they're students soon to become graduates and they get their two-year graduate visa. And that's exactly what I teach. I say, don't undersell, because it's going to be very disheartening applying for jobs and getting knocked back. Sometimes not even knowing that you got knocked back, you just don't hear from a company.
Yeah.
You know, make sure that you sort of understand that bravery that you've had to bring your life to Australia, as you said, foreign language. Also, some people are making an income to send back to their home family. They're a student, but they're also working part-time because it's not a cheap city to live in, Melbourne and Sydney, to be able to provide and to stay in the country. They're studying full-time and exams and assignments and speeches and stuff like that in English, which isn't their first language as well. It's absolutely should be applauded for their braveries.
I think the diversity and multiculturalism of Melbourne is what makes it a great city.
Yes.
It really is. And, you know, if there wasn't an encouragement on people coming from overseas, it wouldn't even have the DNA that it has. So, I think Melbourne's had a really good run at being, you know, the most livable city in the world, and you know, it will always be up there. But it has to adapt and it has to change and it has to give pathways to people to come and live.
Yeah, spot on. And speaking about, you know, sort of helping others and the bravery that people have trying to find work, because you mentioned about starting Creative Natives right before the pandemic, and that's not by choice, but you've been resilient to get through the other side of it. Do you have any sort of golden nuggets of advice to people who are looking to secure their dream job at the moment or change careers in this sort of, I guess, maybe coming up to the post-COVID, sort of post-lockdown world, but then also the work from home era is really cemented in some regards, interviews, you know, over the phone and Zoom, as opposed to people coming in physically, whether it's by choice or not. What sort of golden nuggets of advice do you have for people listening in today?
Oh, look, I think the working from home COVID has in one way prevented in-person networking events happening, but the flip side of that is it's actually created the biggest type of social network, and that's online. And I think that online does remove barriers from, you know, seniority. You know, there's nothing stopping an entry-level person conversing with a CEO over social media, you know, and that's, that I guess is almost a real, you know, by good byproduct of this situation. So in terms of advice, I would say that absolutely be proactive on social media. I would say create a personal brand, you know, connect with the right people, and you've automatically got access to individuals that you wouldn't have had years ago. So I think you can see that as a positive, and I think that's the way you should absolutely look at it. I think that in terms of trying to build a new career, I would say that leave any ego at the door and try and get in with a great company and not be so focused on the title that you're going for. Because, you know, if you don't have the skills on paper, then it's going to be quite a difficult challenge to get that, that role that you want. But if you're willing to play a longer game, then look at the entry-level positions. Because if you've got the right attitude and you are personable and you work hard, that will get noticed in good organizations. And an example of that would be large corporations who potentially have call centers or have customer service roles, which, you know, for some people that may seem like a step back. But I would just say that's a really good foot in the door.
Fantastic introduction. Yeah.
And see where it goes. I mean, you can do that, or you can continually apply for jobs that you're not relevant for and get knocked back. So it's I guess, your mindset of willing to go in at a lower level, but with the idea that it's going to benefit you in the long term.
Exactly. And something like a on the front line, we'll call it, so customer service, a call center, you are having to understand the product, the service at its core level. And that is absolutely beneficial for those other aspects of the business. And those larger businesses, government departments, local councils, they look to keep you in there forever. So starting in customer service is a great way to be able to understand what's happening and then move around and go through from there. But like I say, you can take an opportunity with two hands, or you can keep your ego on your back and weighing you down keep butting heads, particularly when you're looking at Christmas closure period coming up, all that sort of stuff. Time can go very, very quickly.
And I think I would say that, you know, the experience you can gain in a call center, it sets you up. You know, it gives you real experience of handling customers. And in a world of tech and everything like that, you still need people with empathy, with soft skills that can make people feel good. And that's the stuff that you learn from a call center or in a customer service role. So don't ever underestimate the power of working in one of these roles that will help shape you further down the track.
Yeah, very true. And particularly everything now is process driven, automated, and everything is at quite a distance as opposed to, like I said before, jumping sort of the front line of it and being that sort of face of the business in a call center type environment. We sort of spoke about your journey to Australia, why you fell in love with it, your PR journey. Fast forward to very recently, you actually celebrated your citizenship, but it was over the teleconference. So talk to me a little bit about how that was, you know, that just that experience in general, doing such a milestone event, but celebrated remotely.
Yeah, look, it was, like most of the last 18 months, quite a bizarre experience. So I was the actual ceremony took place over Zoom. I was on a call with, I think 25 other, you know, soon to be Aussie citizens, and there was the Lord Mayor. And, you know, it's not an easy task, you know, being engaging over Zoom, but he did a great job, and he gave us, a really nice speech around what it means to be Australian. And you know, it was a really nice experience. And, you know, we all had to take our vows and declare, you know, our commitment to the country. You know, I got dressed up and wore a hat, and my partner had got me all the Aussie classics, you know, the Lamingtons.
That's fantastic.
All of there was a meat pie and, because I think she realized that I would have loved to have had
a fuss about it.
Ceremony. Yeah. But look, we had some fun with it. You know, we got the certificate in the post, and yeah, look, it's it, it it is it's a very special moment and something which obviously took 11 years to get to, and it's relief, I think, is the biggest feeling on that.
And it's one with citizenship where with the other visas you've had, you get the grant notification in your email and they come through. Look, I've seen grants at close to midnight, Christmas Eve, weekends, probably as early as 7:30 in the morning. And it's like, oh, great. And there's this instant feeling, but that's it. It's a piece of paper with a TR grant or a permanent residency grant. But your citizenship is one where you have to attend that ceremony, do the vows until you're formally a citizen from there, and can be quite a process between, congratulations has come through to actually sit in that ceremony. So it's good that look, modern technology, you could still do that process rather be remote. And it's good that you, or more so your partner, made a bit of fun with it. Lamington, the meat pie on the table.
No, it was great. And it's a big milestone. And one that I think anyone who goes down the process should take some time to take it all in and actually appreciate what it stands for, what it means, the freedoms that it provides you, the opportunities. You know, I think easily one of the best countries in the world to live from a standard of living perspective. I know we've had a challenging 18 months, but look, it's still a great country. It's safe. It's clean. You know, it is a really great country, and definitely one that, you know, whenever I have friends coming over from the UK to visit, they go, wow, you've got it pretty good here.
Well, fantastic, mate. And look, you've given us great insight to your journey, and I guess your current situation, Creative Native, started before the pandemic. We're looking at somewhat getting out of lockdowns as we speak. What does 2022 bring for Creative Natives?
I mean, for me personally, I'm 3 weeks off from having my first child, so I imagine the rest of this year will be fairly busy. I guess from Creative Natives' perspective, it's quite difficult to think too far ahead. You know, we've just hired our ninth person, and 12 months ago we were two. So we've grown, quickly. But I think we just want to make sure that we're having a good time, because I think we all just need a bit of a break, to be honest with you. It's been a very intense 12 months. It's very busy. We're working tirelessly, and it's a challenge to keep going. So I don't necessarily think it's going to be about major growth, but I think it's about just kind of, having fun while we do it and do the best we can.
Yeah, keeping your heads and keeping to your core.
Yeah.
Well, fantastic, mate. Look, really appreciate your time. And key takeaways for people listening in is that resilience and that adaptability, that advice you had around careers and how to get your foot in the door. And this is coming from someone who, not only started his business before the pandemic, got through it. And like I said, you've gone from starting pre to now you've got 9 people working for Creative Natives. But also, complete full circle journey of permanent residency from setting foot in Australia into Sydney, going to an Irish bar and having a steak to, doing your citizenship ceremony recently with a meat pie in Lamington.
Yeah.
Full credit to yourself.
The circle of life.
Yes. which involves food, funnily enough.
Exactly right. Exactly. But thanks for having me on, mate. I really appreciate it.
No, thank you for sharing your journey. Thank you, Ryan.
Cheers, mate.
Such a classic story of backpacking in Australia on a working holiday visa and then falling into a career that was nothing close to what he studied at uni, then getting sponsored, then progressing onto PR and now Australian citizenship. It's great that he has settled in Australia so well and is now running a thriving business.
Absolutely. I really love the practical tips that Ryan gave regarding changing careers and seeking employment in the post-pandemic climate. As a bit of a background to the legal context of what a backpacker visa is, the working holiday visa, the 417 visa, is designed for young adults from eligible countries to come to Australia initially for 12 months, but have the ability to also work, hence the title working holiday. There is a strict visa condition that migrants on this visa cannot work for one employer for any more than 6 months at a time, and that's designed to move people around from employer to employer and potentially region to region, hence the tie into the unofficial backpacker term. It's a great opportunity for people to see as much of this great large country as possible and fund it through work at the same time.
And just to add to that, any person who applies for a visa with work rights and still holds a working holiday visa with the 6-month restriction, they can actually apply for a waiver of that condition. So, Evan, you mentioned it is initially just for 12 months. What do backpackers need to do to extend their stay further?
To gain access to apply for a second year, you need to do at least 3 months of certain specified work. And to gain access for a third year, then you need to do 6 months of that specified work on your second visa. This specified work includes the following industries and sectors: tourism and hospitality in northern, remote or very remote Australia, plant and animal cultivation in regional Australia, fishing and pearling in regional Australia, tree farming and felling in regional Australia, mining in regional Australia, construction in regional Australia, bushfire recovery work in declared bushfire affected areas, and critical COVID-19 work in the healthcare and medical sectors. It's a great initiative by the Department of Home Affairs to incentivize young and hardworking backpackers to not only work regional, but in these demand areas. If you're listening to this podcast from outside Australia right now and have thought about backpacking around Australia, perhaps this segment has sparked some further interest for you.
Yeah, and it's a really great initiative for regional employers in Australia to fill temporary positions in their workforce. So as of the 1st of December 2021, working holiday visas will be able to enter Australia without an exemption, along with numerous other temporary visa holders, including prospective marriage visa, training visa, temporary work visa, New Zealand family relationship visa, student visa, and temporary graduate visa holders. For a full list of exempt visas, please visit hansenmigration.com.au. That's hansenmigration.com.au and read our latest blog. While you're there, you can also subscribe to our blog or book a free consultation if you're looking to migrate to Australia on a family visa.
Further to that, visitor visa holders still require an exemption to enter Australia. However, currently citizens of New Zealand and Singapore can enter Australia on a temporary visa, including a visitor visa, without an exemption. As of the 1st of December, citizens of Japan and South Korea can also visit Australia without an exemption, and they do not need to quarantine if entering Victoria, New South Wales, or the ACT.
So with the emergence of the Omicron variant, there have been restrictions put in place for people who have been to South Africa, Lesotho, Eswatini, Namibia, Botswana, Zimbabwe, Seychelles, Mozambique, or Malawi within the last 14 days. Australian citizens, permanent residents, and their immediate family must quarantine for 14 days if they have visited any of these countries within the last 14 days. Any other travellers from these countries are not permitted to enter Australia, even if they hold a travel exemption, an eligible visa, or if they are seeking to enter Australia under the Safe Travel Zone arrangement. For updates regarding quarantine, we recommend checking the relevant state government website. There is the possibility that the Australian border restrictions will tighten further because the situation is constantly evolving.
Stay tuned for further updates.
Thanks for listening to the Journey to Oz podcast. If you've liked what you've heard, please subscribe and also leave us a review. We will release a new episode every second Tuesday, so please stay tuned.
The Journey to Oz podcast is produced by Nick Hansen from Hansen Migration, Migration Agent Registration Number 1679147, and Evan Bishop from Worldly Migration, Migration Agent Registration Number 1679414. Any information discussed in this podcast is made available for entertainment purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for professional advice. We do not make any guarantee or accept any responsibility for the accuracy and completeness of any of the information discussed. You should obtain advice from a registered migration agent or an immigration lawyer before acting on any of the content discussed in this podcast. You can find a list of registered migration agents by visiting mara.gov.au. The information contained within this podcast may not be reproduced without our prior written consent. In the spirit of reconciliation, we acknowledge the traditional custodians of land throughout Australia and pay respects to their elders. We extend that respect to all Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islanders today. Thank you for listening.